For 10/26/2011, we might as well face it. It's Video Games Hot Dog. I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm Aaron.
And this Hooray. Is Video Games Hot Dog again. How's it going, guys?
Not bad.
Hey.
Anything exciting happened to y'all since the last episode of Video Games Hot Dog? Our listeners are dying to know.
I started a new exercise regime.
Really?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty exciting.
The secret police are going to help me get my gut into shape.
Cool. What are you doing?
Yeah.
I'm
telling people about your exercise regime, so you'll...
So it won't be secret. Right
word? No, it's regimen, I think. Oh, but that's okay. Nice. That's why I made the little secret police joke.
Gotcha.
I got on the treadmill and did like brisk walk for 10 minutes and then I said, all right, let's see how long I can jog for. So I set another timer for 10 minutes. And I mean, my treadmill has kind of like a incline. It's like 10 or 15 degrees and the belt's a little
wow,
stiff.
That's cold.
So it's kind of a workout, but I figured I can probably do 10 minutes of jogging. And I got about 4 minutes, and then I had to lie on the floor for about 45 minutes.
Nice.
But I figure it'll get easier as I
go. Did you bleed out of anything?
No, not yet.
So your exercise regimen is just exercise sometimes?
Yes, just exercise. Okay. I found a website that was like advice on how to get rid of specifically your gut, and it had this thing that it suggested that it called interval training, where you like mm-hmm. walk for 1 minute and then jog for 1 minute and then sprint for 1 minute and then jog for a minute and then repeat.
And so you thought you would like
20 minutes.
You would like walk for 1 minute and then pee for 1 minute yeah. and then walk for 1 minute and then eat pudding for 1 minute
yeah,
and then play video
be,
games for like
that,
12 hours.
That would be the ideal. That would be the ideal situation.
There you
but
go,
no.
yeah. Just peeing and eating pudding.
Yeah.
That's like a...
But this is a dream diet.
It's a beautiful circle.
You can,
a goal.
You can burn a lot of calories by solving puzzles.
Oh, yeah.
So that's another option.
Yeah.
Yeah, work on some puzzles while I'm on the train.
I'm getting my brain in shape, shrinking it.
It's been my understanding that you cannot target weight loss to any specific body part.
You know, another good way of burning calories is by putting together jigsaw puzzles, as long as those jigsaw puzzles are actually one-to-one scale landscapes.
Oh, okay.
Or so, like constructed
like
on Easter Island.
50-pound lead weights.
One-to-one.
Yeah. So you're just moving around lakes and seagull. That's the tricky part, getting the seagulls in the right place.
Yeah, because they move around.
Yeah, the Grand Canyon
puzzle.
You got
to staple them to the clouds.
Recommended for ages 7 to 9. That's great.
Seagulls are fucking lost.
It was once an ocean.
Sure. They could just be really old seagulls. They're vampire seagulls.
I fell off my regime.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I was doing interval training on my rowing machine, but I have not touched my rower in at least 2 weeks.
I figured, yeah, I'm not very inclined to exercise, but I decided that since I spend a lot of time just sitting at the computer listening to podcasts anyway, there's no reason I shouldn't be able to spend 20 minutes a night listening to a podcast
sure.
on a treadmill.
Biking to and from work is made infinitely, infinitely better by having podcasts listened to the whole time.
Yeah. You could listen to a treadmill podcast, like Stop Treadmilling Yourself Jordan Jesse Treadmill.
Video Games Treadmill.
Yeah. Yeah. Treadmill confirmed.
Giant treadmill cast.
Yeah.
John
Stewart Treadmill's Velocicast.
It's frustrating sure. how hard it is to really get into the sort of swing of doing exercise and then how easy it is to fall out of the swing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to ride my bike to work on Monday, but then my bike was all bullshit and my bike pump was all double bullshit.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I should put a little bit of air in this tire. And I plugged in the bike pump and it let all the air out of the tire and then wouldn't put any back in.
Oh.
I'm like, ah, oh, sweet. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks, bike pump.
It's a bike pump for the world.
The bizarro bike pump.
I think it's just a broken bike pump. But also, I mean, in a way, in a lot of ways, a bizarro version of something is just the broken version of that thing, right? Yeah.
I also read Ready Player One.
Oh, how'd you like it?
Fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I read it in like one sitting.
I'm excited to read that. Is your girlfriend done reading it?
No.
What?
I don't know, man.
What does she do all day except for read that book? She's clearly not reading that book.
I don't think she's reading that book. You could just take it. Maybe she wouldn't notice. Take it off the nightstand. Don't look at the third drawer. There's only two drawers in the nightstand. That was the joke. So don't look in the third drawer because that'll mean you've dug another drawer into the floor of my bedroom. And that would actually
another
be pretty
drawer
cool.
into the floor. Everybody?
Yeah, well, there's some in there. I mean, they're secret.
I see.
That's where I keep my secret stash.
Well, I know you keep your pudding in one of those.
Yeah.
So.
$240 worth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You were talking recently about hiding some bottles of water in another secret drawer in your basement.
What? I wasn't talking about hiding bottles of water. I was talking, and, you know, you can, like, I guess if I make fun of you about breaking in your headphones, you can make fun of me about suggesting
for secreting
maybe it
water
wouldn't
away.
Be a bad idea to have some drinking water at the house, just in case.
Yeah.
In case of zombies or apocalypses.
Yeah, zombies or nuclear bombs, or maybe the 99% come after me with pitchforks and shit.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I've been saving all my bottle caps.
Oh, yeah? To trade to them for
I think only Nuka-Cola bottle caps are worth anything now. So you need to start investing in Nuka-Cola.
Anyway, what I've decided to do is just fill your bedroom with water. I started right after you left this morning, so it ought to be getting pretty full.
Probably.
What have you been up to, Aaron?
Not too much lately. Just been, as I mentioned, not exercising.
Mm-hmm.
And, just been
doing jam exercises.
Doing jam exercises.
Our listeners would like to know if you ever got your instruments and stuff back.
Yeah, people were asking us.
We did not.
Even the ones that turned up at the pawn shop.
Yes. Because we had no serial numbers for any of them, we were basically screwed. And not only that, once we looked into the whole filing a claim for the homeowner's policy, that was also going to not be worth it. So it's basically a total loss. But that's okay, and everyone's...
Do you think it was an inside
job? I mean,
job?
Even though I'm... Did Even you though visually I'm crying right now, it doesn't... I'm not
Well,
really,
you're only crying on the outside.
I'm not really...
On
yeah.
the inside,
on
you're,
the
as,
inside
you're as
I'm
happy
fine.
A clown.
I'm fine.
Happy as a clown, clam.
It is kind of a bummer, but I don't know. It's been... I don't really care anymore.
On the inside, I am literally a skeleton with a clown painted on it.
That's right. I'm literally a skeleton with jack-o'-lantern triangular shaped eye
triangular
sockets.
Triangular eyes on the skeleton. Yeah. We as we were leaving the Mexican restaurant, there was an orange skeleton where the skull was a jack-o'-lantern.
Okay.
And I feel like that's...
That's not scary.
That's not cool. That's not okay. You're just taking a bunch of Halloween things and sticking them
like
together.
It's like Sleepy Hollow... in modern day, if with all the original characters, right?
Okay, sure.
Sure.
The ghost of what's that guy's name?
Ichabod Crane.
Yeah.
No, but it's not the ghost. It's just his body.
Just his bones.
Yeah.
Okay. The ghost of Ichabod Crane is somewhere else, probably in heaven.
I don't know.
Yeah, his bones are left here, except for the head bone.
Yeah. Well, that might be inside the pumpkin.
It might just be a hat.
Yeah.
So the Endermen don't get him.
He might have had a skull instead of a candle. A candle instead of a skull, I meant. So that's what's inside the jack-o'-lantern.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Wouldn't that hurt your brain?
Well, I don't know. It's holding your brain. Your brain's inside the candle.
Oh, okay.
It's probably okay.
What have you been up to?
Ask that dude from Beauty and the Beast. Don't ask me.
What have you been up to, Zach?
Nothing. Working and went to BlizzCon.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a thing.
Sure, but we'll talk about that during news and video games.
I guess.
And what have you been playing? We ate a steak, like we said we were going to.
That's true.
Nice. Drank a beer. I had a pretty good size hangover.
Yeah, we got kind of drunk.
Well, went to an Irish laser pub.
Yeah. Irish laser pub. What's that about?
It was an Irish pub where suddenly inside there were a lot of lasers pointed at a disco ball.
Yeah,
like and laser pointers.
I don't know.
It was
a lot
of
club lights.
Points of lasers around the room. It was
not
surprising.
Safe.
Super loud music. Super annoying light show, and there were like 12 people in the bar. Nobody was dancing.
You know what I just realized? What they do is they get on their sign, it says Irish pub, but then the P in pub is actually on a swivel, and it turns upside down, and a little spacers go in, and it's Irish club.
It was the Irisher or something?
Do they play Irish?
Yeah, it was called
dub?
The Old Irisher.
The Old Irisher, which I didn't think that was a thing.
This is like, hey, what's a name? That, like, let's have a five-year-old make up the name for our Irish
and it was,
pub.
It was Old A-U-L-D.
Yeah. The Old Lang Syne.
Yeah, it was very strange.
Well, as an Americer, I find that term very offensive.
I got a lot of drunk there. That was a bunch of drinks. We talked about video games.
Yeah.
With our Blizz buddies. It was great. What about you?
So I was also at BlizzCon this past weekend. And then
you were? I didn't see you there.
Yeah. That's funny. What a weird coincidence. Sleeping in the same room. but you were too drunk.
I was.
You sure you didn't see two of me? And then in the spirit of continuing to look through my childhood things, I had given Zach a book, and he thought that it was so great that he went and got the first publication by that author for me, which I was going to read some excerpts of tonight on the show. this book from our childhood is called How to Master the Video Games.
There were few enough video games at the time of the publication of this book that you could publish a book on how to master them.
All of them, yeah. So, you know, it has like an introductory section where it talks about how there are, you know, five types of video games.
Pac-Man.
Well, one of them is maze games. Okay. One of them is Space Invaders type games. One of them is Astro Blaster type games. And then there's Misc.
Wow.
Yeah.
Pong is a misc.
There's this awesome section which is Know Your Enemy, which has a diagram with the microprocessors in the middle, and then there's ROM, RAM, and input pointing in, and then output pointing out.
I can see how that would help you be good at a video game.
Yeah, exactly, right?
So is it just generally speaking, or do they dive into specific games?
They do.
So
they dive into every specific game.
Including
GORF, which is a Space Invaders-like.
Yeah.
And
so when was this published?
That's an excellent question. It was in the either late 70s.
Wow.
Oh, November of 1981.
Oh, wow. That's pretty late.
All right.
I mean, who knows when he wrote it?
That's true.
Yeah. Right. Those publication channels crawl at a snail's pace.
He does give general advice to mastering any video game.
Oh,
okay.
So this has got to still be valuable advice.
Yeah, exactly.
Today.
Right. Yeah. So like this is like, you know, this should be available even today.
Yeah.
So the seven steps are: 1, reconnaissance. 2, teamwork. 3, concentration. 4, tempo. 5, observation, which I don't know how that's different than reconnaissance. 6, experimentation.
Oh my.
And 7, memorization.
Well,
so the experimentation and the teamwork, I got that under control.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is the reconnaissance described as? You watch other people play the video games? And how is that different than observation? There's paragraphs about
read
each of
all
these.
The cheat codes.
So it says a quarter spent before you have seen the attract mode, and at least 5 sample bouts of a game is a quarter wasted. That is the first sentence. Effectively,
that is a bold statement.
I know. That's effectively the first sentence of this entire book, first real meaningful sentence. Yeah. Before you spend any money, you should watch other players, experienced and inexperienced. From observing other beginners, you will learn the game's pitfalls. From observing the experts,
By observing experts, you will observe the game's Mortal Kombat.
Okay, this is an odd sentence. It is an unfortunate fact that most players are better suited for some types of games than for others.
Huh.
Wait. Most players are better suited for some types of games than for others.
So some players are suited for every
most
type
games?
Of
game. Yeah, I don't know.
So you can't be good at all of the video games all of the time, but some people can be good at some types of the video games some of the time.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
Very profound.
Yeah. I'm gonna delve through my other childhood notebooks and see if I can come up with some other.
And that can just be a regular feature. It could just be doing that's not related to video games somewhere. What had you been doing in the late 70s, early 80s, Kevin?
Yeah.
I also I got a copy of Arkham City that I haven't played yet, but it came with what I think is probably the worst comic book I've ever read.
I read the first couple pages, and it was definitely not good, but I'm curious as to how that turns into the worst comic ever.
It was
made.
It was the worst one I've ever read, and I haven't read a lot of bad comic books.
Oh,
I guess
that's the problem.
It is written, you know, it's like, okay, so there's this like super intelligent, like proper speaking guy who is kind of narrating the whole beginning of it, but it's like that guy was written by a guy who had heard a lot of that sort of conversations in movies, but doesn't actually know how to make sentences. Yeah, you come highly qualified is the first line, which is, what? That's no one would ever say that. And then every section of the rest of that, like, you come highly recommended or you are highly qualified, right? Yeah. Like, a lot of just extremely things that are technically sentences, but are just awkward sentences that no one would ever use.
Maybe it wasn't originally in English.
That could be. Yeah. I'm pretty sure the guy's name who wrote it was like Danny something. So he could be from anywhere.
Irish,
yeah. Sure.
Could be original.
Could be
Gaelic.
One of those Irishers.
Yeah. Originally in Welsh.
Yeah.
There were a lot of bets that consonants in a row
weren't.
Wait, don't be a racist. You racist.
What? Welshing on a bet?
Mm-hmm. Did you see they have an iPad app that shows you exactly where all the hidden collectibles.
Yeah.
I saw that. I was curious as to whether, like, I would buy that in a heartbeat and use it as an adjunct to my gameplay experience, mm-hmm. if getting the collectibles marked them off on the map without me having to hit the thing that said that
what?
I had gotten them.
Yeah. How would that even work?
I don't know. It could check in with some online thing. Why? And then the map could also be checking in with some
online
thing.
Why do you feel
thing.
That that's a stumbling block? For you, because I mean, presumably,
I'd have to, having to remember to reach down and hit the thing every time suddenly renders it useless.
Huh? Hmm. Even it sitting right there next to you on the couch.
Yeah, because I won't be paying attention.
What if it was mounted in front of your face instead of the screen for the game?
Like, so I couldn't see the screen at all. That would probably work. Yeah. Well, then you'd need some kind of feedback, right? Like if you were playing Arkham City,
you could hear it. Voice recognition.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Siri, mark that one completed.
You have to, the way that you get it to know that you're controlling Arkham City is that you have to say, Siri, I'm Batman. Tell your friends.
All my friends are also named Siri.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I got the hockey pads, motherfucker.
I was reading Jordan Mechner's blog yesterday, and he had a transcript of a thing where he set up a conversation between Siri and Eliza, then resulted in Siri interpreting something that Eliza said as calling one of his friends, at which point he immediately lunged at the phone and ended the conversation. It was pretty good. One of our listeners sent a tweet like after the last show that's like, hey, have you seen this? That Jordan Mechner posted an ebook of like some of his diary entries while he was working on Prince of Persia. Hmm. And I downloaded it and I read the whole thing mostly while I was at BlizzCon. And it was pretty good.
Do you not feel like a snoop reading that? Like, I realize that he published it. But, like, reading somebody else's freaking diary, that is just seems so weird.
It is, I think that it was being written with an audience in mind.
Yeah?
It is very well, like, I think he talks in it about writing his memoirs, right? And I think in a lot of ways he was writing this to publish later if he amounted to anything.
Right, well, does it have a lot of his personal life
outside
of it?
Man, I beat off like four times today.
I know.
Dear diary.
Yeah, dear diary. Sorry this page is so stained. I accidentally beat off on you. Yeah.
I still don't feel like a snoop.
He talks about those homoerotic camping trips with Robert Garriott.
It sucked, man. He talks about how excited he is to go on this rafting trip, and one of the people going on this rafting trip is Robert Garriott, the president of Origin Systems. And then he comes back from it and was like, that was great. I should do that again. Like, God damn it. I want to know what Robert Garriott was like in the 80s when he went on a rafting trip with you.
And before his name was Richard.
Yeah, did he raft well? Did he change his name to Richard Raftwell? And then back to Richard Garriott, and then to Richard Garriott de Caillou.
So there's going to be a rafting part DLC that you can get for the ebook later.
No, he didn't. He chose not to take his notebook with him on the trip and various times. I don't know. You know, I mean, he was just like a rich white guy that was making video games. Mostly what the diary entry is about are how much he wants to stop making video games and focus on his film career. Which is, it's weird. It was interesting. It was, it's like it starts out with him graduating from Yale. And so it's very much like, wow, this guy is in a world that I don't understand at all.
I mean, Yale's not that far from removed from your world.
From Arizona State.
Yeah.
Go tell them that, each of them in sequence and see how they react.
Did he ever do anything like famous in movies?
He wrote the original screenplays for the Jake Gyllenhaal Prince of Persia movie.
Yeah, except for that.
Recently. Yeah. I didn't hear anything about that one way or another.
It was okay. Yeah. It was just kind of generic, it was all right. Generic action movie. Mm. nothing particularly like interesting about it.
I mean, the Wikipedia article seemed to take pains to say that he wrote original, like initial drafts of the screenplay, and not that
the Legos
that...
were cool.
Was he credited on the film?
I don't know.
Probably.
If you don't get credited, apparently you just get you don't get anything in terms of residuals ever on anything.
It was weird. It was just like a lot of the stuff that was about the game was focused on like negotiating royalty rates and stuff. And also like he just didn't seem to. The reason that I say this was written for an audience is because it just glosses over a lot of, like, every once in a while he'll say something that makes you realize, oh, wow, he wrote this entire fucking thing in Assembler. Like, this is what he was doing in the weeks between these journal entries, was fucking writing assembly language code that made Prince of Persia into a game.
That just blows my mind.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. It was really good.
Did he write it by himself? Was it just one person?
Yeah.
Wow.
As I understand it, yes. Other teams worked on the ports. Eventually, The Last Express was done by like a 30-man team, I guess. He talks about like how freaked out he is about the idea of starting a company, but how this train game is going to be amazing, and yeah, that's where it ends. I think he kept the journal up. He might publish more of it later, he said. I guess he had been posting these journal entries on his blog for the last couple of years.
Yeah, that was where I was familiar with it from, is reading some of it on his site.
Yeah. Anyway, that's what I've been doing. Is that what y'all been doing?
Yeah.
All right. What about video games? Playing any video games?
Been playing the new Professor Layton.
The Hidden Spectre.
The Last Spectre, I think is what it's called.
Ultimate Ghost.
It's pretty good. I mean, it's a Professor Layton game.
More of the same?
Yeah, more of the same. Although the puzzles are pretty good. They haven't been particularly challenging yet. There's been a few that have been kind of stumpers, but there's been no Towers of Hanoi.
They prefer to be called amputees, Riff.
What's that?
Stumpers. I think they prefer to be called amputees.
You know, I can actually imagine Layton taking advantage of the 3DS in a way that other games haven't. Or
unfortunately, wouldn't. This one is still just a DS.
Sure, but like
eventually,
like, that seems like something that could actually be a really interesting feature of it.
Yeah, you could see move around parts and layers and things like
and
that.
And they could include some cards in the thing that you have to like.
Oh yeah, some VR scan, stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
That's true.
There's all kinds of ways I could imagine doing cool puzzles with that, and that seems like a. I mean, it's still gimmicky in some ways, but like it could fit in with the fiction of the game a lot better than some of the other sort of real gimmicky stuff. So,
Speaking of which, I learned a trick that there is a trick for getting DS games to run at native resolution on a 3DS.
Oh, really?
What? Yeah. You at some point, and I don't remember what point, but it worked the first time I tried it. You just hit start and select at the same time while the DS game is loading, like after you've hit the icon, but before it loads the game, just hit start and select, and then it runs it in a smaller screen at native res.
How smaller is it?
Not much. Okay. Not really noticeably. It is a little weird, like playing that Alien game. There are points at which it's like, okay, can I keep going here? Does this just end? Oh no, that was just the black on the edge of the screen making it look like this duck didn't go anywhere, as opposed to it being one of the most of the ducts that doesn't go anywhere.
Don't go anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. So how, like, it's just more of the same, Professor Layton?
Yeah, pretty
stuff?
Much. I mean, the story is interesting, and the acting is good, the writing is good. There's been no puzzles that I felt were just bullshit. There's no Towers of Hanoi or jumping pegs or
have
15
you
puzzle. But
missed any puzzles, and or have there been any puzzles that have been like just sort of ridiculously hard to find or anything like that? Because I felt like that's one of the problems that I always had with those games.
I had been finding every one so far, but the chapter I just finished, when it says, all right, here's all the puzzles that you missed, and we've given them to this cat so that you can go get them. And it was like a whole page of them, and I was like,
oh,
Jesus, where were all of those hiding? But, I mean, you can still get to them, so it's not a big deal.
In the third game, there was a puzzle that appeared for no obvious reason, like 40 screens away from where you were, probably. Or, you know, that probably wasn't 40 screen span, but like 20 screens away. Like there was absolutely no reason to think to go back.
40 screens round trip.
Yeah. There was no reason to think to go back there. And I was like, why? Why did one just appear at this super late stage of the game?
Yeah, I guess it's
just... Way far away.
I mean, that's why they've got that here's the ones you've missed feature, I guess, if you just...
Sure.
Because so it does have a lot of walking around the map, but there are like taxi stands, sort of, that will let you jump to another taxi stand somewhere else.
But it's like,
so you get to choose between, I want to skip over to the next part of town I'm supposed to go to and just move on with the story, or you can walk around the town and click everybody again and see if there's any new puzzles.
See, like, this is something that I think I have a little problem with. Like, I kind of want to see every conversation. Like, I kind of want to see all the content that they've created. And so the idea of letting them just go to the cat or whatever is really distasteful to me. So I, like, you know, I have a neurological problem with, like, completionism or whatever, but like, I desperately want to do that. And so, like, that and, like, conversation trees in games where you don't get to see all the different branches, yeah, like, that's just rough. That's super rough.
That one in particular always bugs me when you go through and you pick the first couple of things and it boots you out of the conversation and you can't get back there to try something else.
Yeah,
that's always
really
painful.
I always feel like that makes me feel like the world is bigger and that I'm that I'm making some decisions about, you know, that I like I feel
that.
Like,
well,
it's my game.
Also point out that
you one half a dozen of
you've
them.
Written some of those recently,
so. Yeah, that is true. But you get to you get to go back and try it again without having to restart an entire ascension.
Well,
yeah,
maybe.
Depends on what you're playing.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know.
What else have you been playing?
My feelings as a designer are not always the same as my feelings as a player.
And see, that's the problem. You get in this ivory tower that you live in like half the time. And all of your video games are out on the balcony of the ivory tower. There's some sort of weird two-way mirror in the window, so you can't see from one to the other, but you can see from the other to the one.
Which you got at IKEA. Wait, where's this metaphor going? I'm confused.
I can't tell if your tower's above the clouds or not. So it's like the people look like ants, and they're like, no, those are players.
Is this tower also on a pedestal of some sort?
Yeah.
Or on a high horse?
Mm-hmm. It's
surrounded by rings.
It's a sculpture of a horse shaped like a pedestal.
Riding a wizard. I think that's pretty much all of note that I've been playing that I hadn't already been playing. Like, I played some more Aliens. I played some more Binding of Isaac. I played some of that. What was that iPhone, iPad game that we were talking? Mage Gauntlet. Yeah. It was all pretty good stuff.
Wizard is about to start over to try and get 3 stars.
Yeah. I've got such a compulsion. I've been playing a lot of Mage Gauntlet, actually, which I was glad because Aaron had recommended that to me. I guess maybe the first day that it came. Yeah. It had to have been the first day because there were no reviews of it when I downloaded it.
Yeah, it's weird. You bought it. We bought it within 10 minutes of each other, and you got the early adopter DLC.
You supposed to get it before Sunday.
Free. And
you didn't get it?
No, mine just didn't have
That's a glitch. Weird. That's something that went wrong.
Yeah, it was supposed to be all day.
You could probably contact them.
Yeah.
No. But that, yeah, I've spent like a lot of time playing it because it's...
For some dumb rabbit hats.
Totally up my alley. That's very much like... I used to love like the Secret of Mana games and stuff like that, and it's very much in
really
that
beautiful.
In that vein.
I love the pixel art in it.
Yeah. The art is really good. The writing is pretty good.
I wish that when you broke stuff, there was anything in it.
Yeah.
It is very specifically... There's very specifically not anything in those. Like, that is an intentional choice on their part.
Definitely.
You often have to break it to get past it, to get to stuff that's beyond it, but, you know.
And it's... I love the way everything is destroyed and the I don't know, there's a good oomph to it when you hit it.
Yeah. Yeah. Little pieces of
it. Yeah,
it's
nice.
You can toss around.
And then, yeah, and those things keep moving around.
I feel like the controls are a little imprecise than I would prefer.
Yeah, that is a problem with games that don't have physical buttons. But this one, the control scheme, the like pro D-pad or whatever that they've got is the best
pretty good
iteration of this that I've ever seen where they don't even have a control. You just sort of swipe your finger to the right to go right and it doesn't matter where it is. And that works out most of the time.
Yeah,
it felt like Space Miner where you're just playing a video game at that point, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's good enough that it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah,
as opposed to something like I Dig It, where that is a really good game that I really wanted to play a lot of, but the controls fucking sucked. And like the controls for the HD version of that on the iPad are just complete horseshit.
Really?
Like it is unplayable because of the way the joystick responds. And I don't know, I don't understand how they were able to sell this game like this unless this is just happening to me.
There's another game that came out for phone and iPad just recently that was like a 16-bit pixel art Metroidvania, and I can't think of the name of it offhand. But,
I know what you're talking about.
And I haven't tried playing
it
yet,
good.
But all the reviews of both on iTunes and of blogs that I read have been like, this would be really great if the controls weren't absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
I wonder how that happens. I wonder if... Are the people playing it in an emulator, and so they're not actually playing with the controls before it comes out? Are they just blind to it because they're so close to it?
It'd be pretty difficult to test a multi-touch thing without constantly putting it onto a phone to play it, right?
You can. I mean, there's those. They definitely have computer emulators. I'm not sure how that works.
I think they definitely do a lot of testing.
Doo-doo testing.
Yeah, and doo-doo testing on the touch screens. But I think there's they don't. I feel like they get to a point where they are like, yes, this is good enough. We're not going to be able to tweak it anymore.
Dark Incursion is the name of it.
Oh, okay. That's not the one I was thinking of. But I'll check that out.
What's with all the dark games? Dark Meadow, Dark Incursion? Hey,
Evil's pretty popular, Kevin.
Scribblenauts has also come out for
dark
iPad.
Scribblenauts.
Apparently
Scribblenauts.
Really good.
Wow.
So positive.
The only
it's another one I downloaded
like,
and haven't
murder.
Tried it.
Demon.
That would be pretty great.
Clown.
Scribble Goth.
Batman.
Right before we started recording the podcast, I signed up for Glitch, but I have not yet had a chance to play it.
Okay.
But what I did have a big long chance to play this weekend was the first 10 levels of Mists of Pandaria.
I guess
I leveled to 10.
Sure. Do you consider the starting area? I guess the starting area is part of the expansion, right?
Yeah.
It's a starting area for new class, new race. Yeah. This is World of Warcraft that we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's interesting that they've done a race that can be either faction.
Yeah. Yep. You choose at level 10. There was some funny, we tweeted it. There was a kind of funny, although I wish it had been more legible when I tweeted the thing.
It was all right.
I was thinking about this. Part of me was really surprised that they let people play that in as unfinished a state as it was in. But then the other part of me was like, I wonder if other people would consider this to be an unfinished state. Because
there was most of the stuff there. Like, they were missing some cinematics.
Half of the skills were not yet implemented.
What do you mean half the skills weren't implemented?
Like, you kept getting levels with no skill ups.
Is that something that... Do you always get a skill?
Yeah,
I didn't...
I mean, you don't get 90 skills in
World of
Warcraft.
What's the new thing that they're doing where they've taken away the talent trees?
Yeah, they've taken away the... That's taking away the talent trees is the new thing that they did.
Well, right, but how does it work now? What is it?
You get... It's not really finalized.
Yeah, so you choose a spec at level 10, and then you just get the skills from that spec, and then every 15...
As you level up, you get skills from that. From
yeah,
that
you no
spec.
Longer have to go to trainers to get skills, too. Hmm. You just get all your skills, which
that's
is...
The
I
one
don't
thing
like
that I really don't like, I don't about like that it at all, about this simplification.
And then... The other major thing is every 15 levels, you get to choose one of three skills that are all of the same ilk, right?
Talents, so they'll be like, talents are just like a new category of skills that are sort of mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
You can, I think, they're saying that they're letting you switch between them as easily as glyphs, which now that they've redone glyphs so that there's no cost to replacing them, you can, once you've ever installed a glyph, you can always have that glyph. Like, as long as you're out of combat, you can change them.
Oh, so much for the market in glyphs.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's interesting, though. Like, they're all the skills, all the talent skills. So there's, you know, now there's six choices that you make, basically. So there's, how many is that? 18 different skills that you could have. They're all interesting. They're all really interesting choices. And... They're all like mutually exclusive. So there's like three different kinds of crowd control skills that you could have, or three different DPS like aiding skills, or like you know, for like a mage will have three different fire based skills, three different frost skills, and three different arcane skills that are all mutually exclusive, and you're gonna have to pick one of them. The 90th level choice skills are all pretty impressive and cool.
So there's still going to be people are still going to decide what what the best build is, but there's a lot fewer decisions to be made.
Their goal, at least, you know, like this might be something that is impossible, but their goal is that there will be no best build. It will just be a playstyle choice thing, right?
That would be nice.
I mean, there is going to be a best build for a particular situation, right? There's going to be a best set of talents for a given boss.
Maybe.
There might be a best
combination of talents for different people too. Like, you know, like, so there's like one of the mage talents is like, I can have a sheep that lasts twice as long. I can have a sheep that, when it regenerates at 10% the normal rate. So if it's mostly down, I can sheep it and it won't just be like instantly healed back up. Hmm. Or one of them is I can have two sheep.
Huh.
Right. So like those are all interesting and very different.
Very different, but yeah, it's situationally useful. Yeah.
Huh. I mean, they've taken away a lot of the choices that you make, but I think the bulk of the choices that they have taken away. I mean, there's a lot of arguments going on in comment threads about this. They point out that a lot of the choices that you're making moment to moment in where do I put this talent point is, do I want a 1% increase in this thing or a 1% reduction in this other thing, which are sort of bullshit.
Yeah, these are much more significant. Like, it's going to make PvP really interesting because I assume you won't know what the other people have.
Hmm.
You know, like some of the thief ones are pretty impressive. Like, there's like stealth. There's a thing where you don't come out of stealth for 3 seconds until 3 seconds after you've done an attack.
Oh.
So you get 3 seconds of continuing to be in stealth while doing whatever. There's a thing where you can use any ability that doesn't consume energy while still stealth, I think. And then there was one other one that was
none of your abilities consume energy.
Well, but they're all mutually exclusive. Like, right. there was something else that coming out of stealth gives you a chance at getting like double your energy back or something like that.
I hear at one level you can get either a really awesome comb or a really sweet watch chain.
Yeah, exactly.
But not both.
That's interesting.
And some of the 90th level ones were just shockingly powerful. Like one of the, I don't remember what the other two choices were for the priest, but one of them is, it just seems broken to me, is to swap your health percentage for your friendly target's health percentage.
Huh.
So like you're healing the tank, it gets down to like 10 or 20%. You just swap it out and now you have 10% health and he has full health.
Oh, damn.
Right? Like that just seems like a super easy instant full heal that's like, I think on a 2-minute timer. Like this is, you know, this is all super preliminary or whatever, but, and then you just get yourself healed back up and you're like, I don't even know.
Did they say if they're doing anything to address, because like the blogs and all that I've been reading have been complaining about how they've hurt the leveling game by making it too fast.
I mean, I don't think they're interested in slowing it down.
So, yeah, I mean, it took like an hour and a half to get to level 10. And it was, at least in this content, which I don't know how final it was, whether there was going to be extra stuff added to it or not, it felt like I was on rails the whole time and like just zipping through stuff. And I was thinking about it, and I was definitely sad that they were basically cutting out a lot of what I really enjoyed in the leveling game.
Yeah, because, I mean, But I found the leveling game and questing so much more interesting and entertaining than raiding.
So I think that you still get a lot of that, but it's like it's spread out more, right? Like, because you were leveling from 1 to 60 in a certain amount of time, and now it's probably not as much time. It's probably still like only half the time, but you're leveling from 1 to 90, right? So there's a ton more stuff that you go through and can see.
Hmm.
So I think for a new player, it won't feel as shallow or as empty as it does to somebody who saw it from the very beginning.
Somebody who's used to it. I mean,
and
because you get through it now in half the, like,
you'll play through, like, because the content is so much more constricted, you can play through another class without really seeing a class or a race or whatever without seeing the same content twice.
Right.
Yeah. Which, like, in the mid-level,
that's true until Outlands, which is why Outlands is this weird scar. I mean, Outlands, which was this amazing bit of content that seemed so much better than all of the stuff that had come before it, now is like just this sore thumb.
Yeah, I mean, I think the sort of the more pleasant experience for players is probably outweighs the sadness that I have for removing stuff. But I don't know, you know, this is all very speculative. This is not me not having played for a long time. You know, given my choice, I would have just kept all the content and not changed the leveling arc and like it just would have been slow, and it would be a real meaningful thing, yeah, to have a level 90 character.
I mean, for the people that are only interested in
just rating, give them just a level
give
90
them
character.
A button that says yeah, not level 90, and just let them go. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I have to imagine that it's not that the guys at Blizzard haven't thought about this, right?
Yeah.
Like this is what they've decided to do, and there's got to be a reason for that. I don't think that I would like putting out expansions constantly at the level cap if the leveling game being so slow meant that most players weren't at the level cap, right? Like, I think it is very easy from the perspective of a max level character to say, you don't make leveling faster, fuck that bullshit. But like,
I mean, as somebody who had multiple max level capped characters, I enjoyed the slow process to getting another one.
Yeah, but you are not the everyman when it comes to playing these games, right? So
sure.
It's...
Yeah. I still really feel that itch of wanting to go back and see what the new changes to the old world were, and fly over all the places that I had to walk before. And
yeah,
they're not the same places anymore, though. You can never go home again.
Yeah.
You'll get to Orgrimmar and be like, what the fuck is this? Never seen any of this before. Who's this hot air balloon guy?
So that's... is it possible? Is there any way that you could show someone the original Azeroth?
Nope.
Like, just not... there's no way to do that, is what you're...
They should open a Caverns of Time instance that's just the original vanilla 1 to 60.
Wow. Oh, that would be so great.
Yeah. Let's see. If you think it's so great, go play in it. See how many people follow you. What about you, Aaron? What have you been playing?
I've been playing a lot of Mage Gauntlet, and then I've also been playing, similar to Layton, I have been playing Puzzle Agent 2.
Oh yeah,
because I hadn't played that yet since it came out. So
what do you think about it
so far? I'm about halfway through it. So far I don't like it as much as 1, but it's pretty much the same game. So I feel like they're gonna do the same thing that Layton's done and just make an infinite amount of them with the same kind of puzzle types. And but I like it. I like the voice acting.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the art style and the voice acting. I just the puzzles are not anything compared to Layton.
Is frustrating because, well, so they're not anything compared to Layton, but they're kind of repetitive.
They're very repetitive
within a game that isn't a whole lot of stuff, and the name of the game is
Puzzle. I would just like to see something with Layton and Puzzle Agent where
there's like a crossover.
Well, no, but just a change in the terms of gameplay. Either a timer on the puzzles,
replace all the puzzles with match 3,
or if a wrong answer just stops the puzzle, you didn't get it.
Huh?
I would love something like that, similar to the dialogue trees.
You can't advance the plot.
No, you advance the plot, but you didn't get the puzzle.
You failed. You're in hardcore mode.
Yep.
That'd be great.
The
everybody
new
in
Layton
town dies.
Has a thing that's a little bit like that, and yet again, not at all like that. If you chain together 5 perfect puzzle solves in a row, instead of getting the standard, you know, I've guessed a puzzle, and then you see Professor Layton thinking about it and then go, aha! And instead of getting that, you get like a different sort of fanfare screen for as long as you keep the keep the chain going.
With some tits?
It's, yeah, I was going to say it's the hot coffee mod.
That would be great.
Of Layton. No.
It's hot tea, I think. Yeah. Earl Grey.
It's tea time.
Is there anything awesome if you just solve every puzzle in the game perfectly the first time?
I am the fucking man.
But yeah, there's no real game benefit to it. You don't get any extra pickerats or whatever they are. But,
you get E-peens.
But you get to hear a little cheer when you do it.
Huh. Does it still have that newsy?
Yeah, it's actually a little weird. I think this episode might actually be a prequel because it introduced him as though he and Layton had never met before.
He's actually just a baby that Professor Layton is carrying around for some weird reason.
He does look a little bit younger. But yeah, no, Layton has a hot new assistant this time.
Still no tits, no matter how many puzzles you solve.
No, I mean, she's female, but yeah, she's more proper.
When you take the stylus and touch her tits, does anything happen?
The coins pop out of her nipples when you tap them.
Hint,
I found a piece of gum.
Yeah.
Who was here before me? Puzzle Agent 2. Anything else?
No, not really that. And yeah, Mage Gauntlet. Been playing a lot of that. About halfway through. Where are you, Kevin? Around the same?
I'm on that. So I just made it to the other side of the mountain.
Yeah, yeah. That's. I think you're a little ahead of me, but I'm not too far behind.
I don't know that I'm going to pick it back up.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm like crazy excited about it.
Just don't try to get 3 stars.
It's, yeah, no. I'm
there's
not even,
no point
it's
in
not
doing
even going
so.
To. So I've been playing mostly Binding of Isaac in my in my off moments. It's so good. It's so fucking good.
Yep.
It is
even though you
game.
Have only beaten it once.
Yeah.
You're still just like gaga.
Keep getting closer, you know.
Yeah, I mean, not every time, but because you can still get screwed by bad combinations of prizes. But a lot of games you play, you get a little bit further or a little bit better, or you find an object that you hadn't got the chance to play with before. And
I mean, that's the thing about getting the bad combinations is that they, like, in my mind, you struggle still to get as far as you can with the bad combination, mm-hmm. and that makes you better at the game. Like, this is a game that makes you feel like you are getting better at it because your failures are, like, your fault. When you fuck up, you've fucked up. Unless you get killed,
fucked up now.
Unless you get killed past level 5 by those fucking jumping guys that start teleporting around shooting in
I
a plus
hate those guys
when they
so
land,
much.
That is just
so
the
much
worst
I hate
like,
them.
Walking into a room full of those guys is basically like walking into a room where I have no idea what the fuck is going on, but then I'm down to 1 hit point.
Yep.
Yeah. Ugh. Worst enemy. I also hate those towers, that the skulls that pop up and shoot at you, because you get down to just 1 on the screen, and then you're like, how the fuck do I get this thing to pop up again? You have to start, like, walking in these huge circles around the...
I read somewhere that it is based on, like, they're on a timer, but shooting them resets the timer.
Huh.
So if you don't shoot it for a while, it'll pop up.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, then I guess that makes sense.
And the red ones you can always just shoot.
Oh.
Yeah. The red ones are not immune when they're down.
Nice. We've all learned some things here today.
Yeah.
Especially me. Yeah, man, Binding of Isaac, that shit is good.
Yeah.
It's just a really well-designed, really atmospheric... It's better than it has any right to be. The boss fights are all pretty good. That's the other problem, is some of the boss fights, like Gertie... is just crazy fucking hard. Yeah. And some of them, like, you know, Monstro, no matter what level you're on, Monstro is pretty dealable.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's got fairly predictable patterns. The Horseman I've found to not be that big of a deal.
Yeah, I'm getting used to the Horseman.
Either. Man, you get the freeze shots. If you get, like, Mom's Contact and get the freeze shots, that makes most of the boss fights trivial.
Yeah.
It's really kind of broken.
I found Gertie really easy if I had, wings. Because, or, well, it might depend on the board layout, but I had a block near the wall that I could hover over, and his bullets didn't pass through the block.
Oh, yeah. It is weird that there are so many combinations of things that add up to really variable difficulty in it. Because all of the bosses can be in different configurations of room, which dramatically changes the patterns that you have to develop to win the fight. Man, that's a good game. That's really all is. I can say.
I think I would be really dissatisfied with the randomness of it. It would not feel like a superbly designed experience for me.
You just have to accept it on its own terms. You gotta open your heart to what it is and play the game
open
that it is.
Open your fleshy, bleeding, pulsing heart.
Yeah,
your heart
that is also maybe a vagina.
You really like Dungeons of Dreadmore too, and I sort of was like nonplussed.
Yeah, I like some random generation of some things. Dungeons of Dreadmore takes way too long. The nice thing about the randomness in The Binding of Isaac is that a game lasts 5 minutes if you're unlucky, 20 minutes if you're lucky.
Yeah,
you know, sure. So it's got like a self-correcting feature for bad RNG, which is that you just can't survive. Like, you can't grind levels in it. You know, there are a fixed number of enemies. You go into a room and
there's
you have to fight
of,
until you're dead.
There's a bunch of rails that you have to grind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you get Mom's skateboard.
Yeah.
She had that one pretty deep in the attic, because it's been a while since she was skinny enough and not into the Lord. I guess she could have been skateboarding for Jesus. Did I ever tell you guys about the place catty-cornered from the block that I live on that's called Kids That Rip Skateboard School?
No.
Yeah.
Don't they also do gymnastics?
They do. They do.
And like karate.
I have to imagine that a place called Kids That Rip Skateboard School maybe has to experiment on a week-to-week basis with other ways of trying to make money and staying in business.
Yeah.
Kids That Rip. Who takes their kid to skateboard school? This is just like, I have a kid that I'm trying to make him a combination jock and dweeb, I guess. Because it's, man, like
they should do a grown-ups skateboard school. I would totally go to a skateboard school and learn how to skateboard in an environment where I would not have to be embarrassed for not knowing how
just
to skateboard.
Get a longboard. They're for commuting.
You get a rip. You get a rip stick.
What is a rip stick?
It's like a skateboard that's hinged in the middle. It's like, yeah, imagine a razor scooter, but there's a swivel in the center. There's no handle, and there's a swivel in the center. So
the wheels are also linear as opposed to on four corners, right?
Yeah, it's like you're standing on a roller, like a skateboard that's also a roller blade, but each of your feet is on an independently pivoting thing relative to the ground. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. You see kids on them, and it's like, how the fuck are you not lying in a heap of broken bones and blood right now?
Yeah.
Of course, most of the time when I see a kid, I immediately picture them in a heap of broken bones and blood.
And then you jack up on them.
Yeah, and that's why you're not allowed near children.
Guys, why did you... I was just making jokes about murder. Why did you have to make it creepy?
Why do we have to sexualize it?
Yeah. There's something wrong with you guys.
Murder
you know,
is a very sexual pastime.
You like to think that you're immune to this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But it's closer to the truth to say you can't get enough.
Face
that,
it.
Is that all we've been playing?
I guess I'm going to have to.
Yep.
Hey, guys, what's new? Like, literally, what's new? Kevin, what's news?
Like, in the world?
Yeah. Richard Garriott won his appeal.
Yay.
Or rather, the NCSoft lost their appeal. I don't imagine that he appealed a judgment in his favor. I guess.
Well, but he got more money now than he otherwise would have because he got to hit them for the extra costs, I think.
Yeah, I don't think that really counts as getting more money.
Because it all goes to the lawyers, right?
Well, it depends, right? Unless some of it is punitive against NCSoft for like wasting their time with an appeal or whatever. Yeah. But I mean, I guess what happened there was like Richard Garriott left, like he was fired from NCSoft. And then they categorized his end of employment as voluntary, which meant that they didn't actually have to honor his like $32 million in stock options.
Did he fire himself?
I don't actually know what happened. You know, I mean, clearly he won the court case, so they
yeah,
yeah, it was whatever. Like that, I mean, you know, he's just going to use that money to go into space some more.
Sure,
and I guess that's pretty cool. Maybe he'll fund a one man Martian colony.
Yeah, I wonder if they appeal, that means he just didn't get the money until it's all dealt with. That is a long time.
Yeah. I mean, that's how it works, right? Like, there is all this stuff in place to make it so good things, you know, so the bad things don't happen to good people, and all of those things become tools that bad people can use to stop good things from happening to good people.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, who knows? Nobody knows the whole story, right? It is hard for me to imagine him voluntarily quitting a job in a way that meant that he just threw away $32 million.
Yeah.
Right. It seems very difficult to argue
right. That.
If you were walking away from that much stock on purpose, you would put it in writing that you were walking away from that much stock. But
right.
I don't know anything about no fucking business. What else is going on?
So BlizzCon was this past weekend.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of announcements. Nothing like mind-blowing. So there was the announcement of what the new World of Warcraft expansion was going to be, which is Mists of Pandaria. Hmm. You get to play pandas.
Do they not get to eat anything except bamboo?
No, I think the first food that you get is bamboo. Hmm. I don't know. you get to drink some stuff.
You're thinking koala bears.
Yeah. So there's a new class, which is Monk. Which has no auto attack.
Yeah,
which is weird.
If you have sex with another character that's a pandaren, there is almost zero chance of her getting pregnant.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's one of the rough things about being a pandaren. A lot of people have complained about like this as a joke, and like this is not tonally appropriate to World of Warcraft. But I would argue, and I think so would a lot of other people, that like World of Warcraft has become such a parody of itself that they have no.
I mean, it's
they have
a,
no tonal ground.
It's got
to
a
stand
Plants vs. Zombies minigame now.
It's got a Katamari Damacy minigame that you play.
Oh,
at
really?
One point. Yeah.
Wow.
It's ridiculous.
Whoa.
You're rolling around blowing up all these gnomes and sticking them to the outside of this giant fireball. Like, it has a lot of really tacked on stuff that the engine isn't, you know. I don't know. I'm not going to say that it's gone up his own ass because it's awesome, you know? There's a lot of really cool, really fun stuff in there, but I feel like in the early days, they had, like, Bran Bronzebeard, who was, like, their sort of ersatz Indiana Jones, and his storyline, and you'd follow him around, and you get to see this stuff. Except then in Cataclysm, they just introduced this character called Harrison Jones, who's just Indiana Jones, and you're following him around doing this Indiana Jones shit, and putting the staff in the pedestal and looking at where the light shines.
There was totally stole that from us, man.
They stole it from themselves.
Yeah, they had in a dungeon where you did that.
In Ulduar. It's just gotten, you know, adding the motorcycles. Like it's gotten silly enough that pandas are by no means the dumbest thing in World of Warcraft anymore.
Pandas, I mean, pandas are not new. That's why I don't find that all that weird. And also, this announcement wasn't that big of an announcement because of the trademark registration or whatever, people already knew what the thing was called. So
I was hoping that was a feint.
Yeah, but I think that's like, it would be a feint that was like $10,000 or $20,000 or how much ever it costs to register a trademark.
I think that it would be worth it for Blizzard to spend $10,000 or $20,000 keeping the name of an expansion secret or doing some misdirection. I don't know how much money that is to them. I gotta imagine almost nothing, right? I mean, it's the salary for one more of the thousands of people that they pay to like answer the phones,
sure,
or whatever, right?
Sure.
I mean,
I don't know. The more interesting thing to me was what they said. They're giving Diablo 3 away to any person who has a 12-month subscription to World of Warcraft.
Well, who signs up for a new...
Who basically gets into a contract for a 12-month subscription, sort of like a cell phone contract.
I was reading some stuff today that said you cannot actually pay it a year at a time.
You have to pay it monthly.
You have to pay it monthly, which is weird. I cannot imagine a reason for that did not come from the accountants.
Yeah. I mean, they want monthly income. You know,
because it just makes it more consistent and less spiky on a quarter per quarter basis, which would probably, you know, influence stock prices more than because Blizzard does not operate on a schedule where quarter to quarter is really meaningful to look at what's going on.
I think also they want a charge on your card every month so that you just ignore it. There's my World of Warcraft charge. Whereas if that happened once a year,
right, you got to really consider whether you want to
do another year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, as long as they're doing it at the cheapest rate.
Yeah, it felt like a very savvy move to me.
I mean, it definitely says to me is we are confident that Diablo 3 would make a fuckload of money even if we didn't have to sell it in a box.
Well, yeah, I mean, so I think they're betting very heavily on the profitability of the auction house, the real money auction house.
I believe they are not selling it in a box except for the collector's set.
Oh, really?
No, they showed a picture of the box.
Yeah, so, I don't imagine.
Okay. They showed a picture of the box next to the collector's edition of the box. Collector's edition looks pretty freaking cool.
Pretty good, yeah.
It's got that Soul Stone USB.
USB with like Diablo 2 and Lords on it.
You know, what is weird is that the collector's edition is only available at retail stores.
Really?
Yeah. Which Whoa. I like.
Does that
I went
include
to
Amazon.
No.
Oh, shit.
It said only available at retailers.
Huh. Wait, that sounds like a. I mean, isn't Amazon a retailer?
Well, I don't know. My impression was that the way that I interpreted it was that it was only available. Like it's just not for sale yet either.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
So it's. I mean, I just tried. I wanted to pre-order it because like I'll buy a collector's edition Blizzard game.
Price hasn't been announced.
So
anything.
I think a couple other things, right? So like your contention is that they're confident that they can do it. I think it entrenches people further in World of Warcraft, which they want. And
get
also,
some paying whether they're playing or not, which I mean,
sure.
they're turning all of their customers into me, who's kind of the perfect Blizzard customer, right? Like,
and they, you know, I think they want to get people like invested in it, even in times when they don't have new content out there or whatever. But also, it should also probably mean that there will be a ton of people day one filling the auction house with stuff.
Oh yeah.
So that
yeah.
it will like immediately be something that there's just a ton of stuff in, because I think it being viable is it really dependent on there being just a ton of stuff in there.
But I don't think it was problem. I don't think they were going to have trouble with people playing on day one.
Well, but they need a ton of numbers, because only a certain number of auctions are free each week. Right? So people
sure, but they're going to sell a crazy number of boxed copies on the first day. Like, sure. I don't think that's critical. If they let the WoW people in a week ahead of time,
they get to download. Yeah, I mean, they get to download the client. Right.
So I mean, then there'll already be an economy going by the time the box copy people. I bet they're upset that they had to push back past Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, it's not ideal, but they probably don't care enough. I mean, they don't. They clearly don't care enough to ship it when they don't feel like it's ready.
We were not. Neither of us was interested in playing Diablo 3 at BlizzCon.
Well, I think it was just the beta that we've already
They said
played.
It was a new build. They said in the original announcement that it was a new build. Every time I looked over somebody's shoulder, it looked exactly like what we had been playing.
I mean, I don't think they're tweaking things like adding new classes or something, so.
Oh, come on. Every patch. Is actually a new class every day. That's what they're doing with that microtransaction revenue. Some of the classes are going to be really fucked up. Panda motorcycle. Jack off.
There's a Ripper class, but you got to be a kid.
Yeah.
Right. Skateboard, skate punk, a rip sticker, stick ripper, jack ripper.
So that's all I got rip for news this week.
Yeah, not a lot of news. You guys aware of any news?
Nope.
Well, good news is no news. So this assignment, Beyond Good and Evil, what'd you guys think?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
No, it's beyond good.
Well, but it's also evil, so it balances out.
Yeah.
I did not get all that far into it, actually. I played the intro, and then I got through the mine, mm-hmm. and then I've just... The last time I saved was inside the Resistance hideout.
That's about where
That's
I
around
am.
Where I am.
Yeah. I'm further than that. Yeah. I don't know... I don't know percentage-wise how far I'm along. I'd say maybe a quarter of the way. I'm judging my progress based on pearls.
I'm super having fun taking pictures of animals and shit.
Me too.
Yeah. I really enjoy that as a collectible. I mean,
I do too.
A collectible that is a thing that it's all kind of the same thing, but it's also all different stuff. It's much more interesting than, you know, find 50 stars.
So it kind of drives me nuts because I get praised on these terrible photos. These terrible... terrible photographs.
Kevin is a professional photographer, yeah.
Like, I do something that's, like, off-center and, like, from the back, and it's like, great
way
photo!
Way to go!
I'm like, that was, like, the top of his head. You can't even tell what's going on. Or, like, he'll be mostly obscured by something, like, something giant in the foreground.
A lot of pictures, it's like, it's fucking pig is in the way.
Yeah. Although he always smiles and waves at the camera, which is pretty cute.
By the way, Paige the Pig makes me... I'm going to change my name. It's still going to be Zach, but it's going to be X apostrophe A-H apostrophe Q.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I don't like it. I don't like made-up names. There's some, but not a whole lot of made-up names in this.
Yeah. I mean, I'm guessing all the orphans have stupid names.
Jenny started getting really cross while reading Game of Thrones because of the number of characters' names that were a normal English name with one letter changed.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm.
Yeah.
You got any examples?
I mean, not off the top of my head, but...
Rick with an E at the end.
Yeah.
Jave.
Yeah.
Hermat.
Hermat, yeah. Lorman.
Cameras are Lorman.
Yeah, so
cameras drive me
crazy. I mean,
crazy.
I think this is because we're sort of playing this in sort of a comparison and contrastion to
contrastity
belt to Psychonauts. So like something that I feel like they do better, which isn't really a fair thing to say, but like I much prefer the platforming in Beyond Good and Evil, because
there more or less isn't any.
There,
right?
Yeah,
like,
there isn't any.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right? Because you're not going to fall off of stuff, which is so much nicer in a lot of cases. You know, clearly that's what they were going for. They wanted you to fall off of stuff in Psychonauts, but that was not my favorite part of that game. So like that's enjoyable. But the camera in this thing is in some ways almost worse. Hmm. More of an opponent.
It's worse.
The entry going into a room, the fact that it points the camera at your face, and then there is a point that you can see it happen where it snaps to free camera control, often totally changing the direction that it's facing.
Yeah, it'll
which is
swing
aggravating.
Around.
Like the number of times that I walk into a room and then once I get in there, the camera snaps in a way that I no longer know where I came in. Which is a lot more of a problem with me than with the game, probably.
Yeah.
But there are definitely games that I don't get lost in. I rarely get lost in World of Warcraft, trying to navigate a space in there.
There are some places in there that are confusing.
Sure, like the
Wailing Caverns.
But, like,
stuff.
I don't get lost in simple geometrical spaces in every game. Like,
the mini-map in World of Warcraft is useful. The mini-map in here in Beyond Good and Evil is...
It's very dubious.
Like, the level that I'm on now, it's just a complete baffling mystery.
It is displaying the geometry of the stuff that you can walk on, right? Because that is the game level, and the rest of the stuff is just scenery, but it is not always trivial or even possible to distinguish between places that you can go and stuff that is scenery. So it is very difficult for me to, like, I wish there was a mini-map. That would make it make a lot
mini-map
more sense.
Mini-map would be good, because I keep checking the map every minute.
So in the map you see where you are and what you're looking at, like your view angle, which helps orient me a lot. But yeah, it is of dubious utility. Like once you get the pearl and the animal trackers, you basically are referring to it a lot.
Yeah.
And even then I'm like, oh God. And the connectivity between points, like on different levels, is almost impossible to figure out.
The it tells you you can go to Ming Zhu's shop or whatever to get this, but doesn't tell you where Ming Zhu's shop is.
It's behind sort of a gated access, which you have to do a bunch of stuff before you can get there, which is really frustrating. Because I spent a lot of time looking for that store.
Yeah, I did too, and I found a place where I could buy a heart container, and I found some other stuff that's like, oh, this is cool.
I mean, on the other hand, by the time I did everything in town and got to that shop, I had enough money to buy absolutely everything in that shop.
You got both the pearls too?
Yeah.
Wow. I had enough money to buy everything but the two pearls. I think I was spending a fair bit of creds on consumables.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I have not bought any of those. I felt like that was a waste.
I don't like to die and let it reset my health to half each time.
Hmm.
So like I've
not yet gotten killed. I've not.
Oh yeah,
played
I get
it
killed
to the point
all
where
the time. I've gotten killed 50 or 100 times probably.
Must get tougher later.
It gets tougher, and I mean you are. There's a bunch of sections where you're severely outmatched by the opponents. You're not supposed to fight them basically. So
Psychonauts is better looking, I think. Like I don't think the graphics are better, but I think the art direction is better. But this is way less intimidating. These places look a lot more like places.
Yeah.
I like anthropomorphic animals, and I wish that furries hadn't ruined anthropomorphic animals for everything. Because
wow, really? I didn't even think of furries until you just said it. That's
okay.
I wouldn't have ever thought of that as a thing.
Okay,
because I mean they go to this to the point of like giving you the Latin name of these made up sort of humanoid animals or whatever, which is kind of cool.
Sure. Well, maybe people don't go there. I think of that as a thing that just, like, use of humanoid animals is a thing that just immediately invites derision at this point. Because it's been, like, sexualized not even by the internet subculture, but by people making fun of the internet subculture. Like, it becomes a thing where, like, I have to imagine that a lot of people would see, like, Usagi Yojimbo, the comic book, and think, oh, was this furry bullshit?
Huh.
But it's, I mean, that's...
It's a great tool for expression.
Yeah, and anthropomorphic animals have been huge in video games and comics and cartoons for
especially
as long
the anthropomorphic blue whales.
Distinguishing these guys, distinguishing the characters in this game by them being different kinds of animals drives me way less nuts than distinguishing the personalities of people in Psychonauts by having them be varying flavors of just grotesque, deformed human.
Right.
I'm not good enough at recognizing what species things are, such that I don't always check every human that I or every person that I come across to make sure that they're not some other species.
Yeah.
So that's a little weird.
I have a hard time with the humans, because I think, what if they're like one of the weird, like some of those orphan kids don't look like a different species until you get really close to them.
Right.
It's like, are there like rabbit dudes? I don't know if there's rabbit
dudes. I haven't seen rabbit dudes.
I think I forgot to take a picture of the eagle guy, maybe.
Eagle guy.
The guy who's at a stand.
The newspaper vendor.
Yeah, is it a newspaper
vendor? I think so, yeah.
I don't know what he's selling.
But yeah, there is that one orphan chick with the really long hair. I was like, oh, that's got to be, she totally does not look human, but it turned out she was.
So she goes and she lays down, and then she's uninteractable, right? Like
you can't even take a picture of her anymore?
I mean, I can take a picture of her.
She just becomes the scenery.
You get, so I was like, oh, cool, I can take all these personal pictures. Have you hit the limit for that yet?
No, huh?
It's 5. I was like, cool, my roll of film is filled up at 5.
Yeah, it's a really good camera.
So I guess.
So there's a bunch
pissing
of
me off.
There's a bunch of SLRs in there and some CCPs.
You download the downloading, like the idea that all of these objects that you are touching are like physical digital objects is weird, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, at least there is a conceit for that system.
Yeah.
It's so rare that a video game even acknowledges the fact that your character is carrying around all this stuff that it's pretty cool when they go out of their way to explain it.
Yeah.
That said, you're not really living in a world where that technology exists, because you could just make anything instantly. Right?
I don't know. Maybe there's like licensing issues that keep the software.
Okay, so we can't just make a bunch of guns to point at these invading aliens. Just like, like anything that you could design, you could manufacture.
Did you?
I have the best fleshlight ever.
Were you guys bothered by getting all of the pearls out of order?
This is a fleshlight with millions of tiny women inside it.
I did think that was a little weird. It made me wonder if I'd missed one somewhere, but
yeah.
The reason that it bothered me getting them out of order is because they were displayed in a line. I think if they'd been displayed in a grid, it would never have occurred to me that it was weird to get them out of order.
Yeah, I could see that.
Maybe. I think in a grid, I still would have questioned why it was in that fashion in the grid, too. It always bothers me when stuff is out of order.
To me, like, I was thinking, like, the first thought I had was, shit, I've forgotten to do something that should have been more obvious. Like, because I, like, as I'm playing through the game, I feel like if I were a designer, I'd put them in the order that the player would most likely encounter them, right? And I think I'm a quarter of the way through the game, and I have not found pearl number 3.
Do you think that it is possible that the majority of players in playtesting did not compulsively take pictures of every new animal that they saw the way that we did, and so it took them a while to get to those?
Sure, maybe. But like, I think
I also don't have pearl number 3.
Yeah, there are a ton of the pearls, and like, there are a ton of gaps. I have.
Is pearl number 3 maybe the one that you can buy from New Ray or whatever? The person with the stand, the shop stand?
No, I bought that one.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a pearl that you can buy at Mama Go Garage for another pearl?
I didn't see one, but maybe there is.
There are some pearls in town that you can't get until later. Maybe they're ordered geographically instead of...
Right. Could be that. It could.
You know
be,
what it turns out I like?
Things.
Rasta rhinoceros.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Huh. Who would have known?
Put one of those in anything I make from now on, including like a souffle.
The writing is pretty good in this game.
Yeah.
I'm not bothered by the cutscenes. I like the dialogue.
I like Peepers. He's cool.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't like that she's constantly calling Paige old fart, because she just doesn't enunciate it correctly.
Do you,
not bad for an old fart.
Did you,
like, when you call somebody an old fart, they're an old fart, not an old fart. It's weird. It's weird if you say it that way.
Did you play the air hockey game?
No, okay. I did not. I did not know that you could. Is it fart hockey?
It's kind of fart hockey.
Huh. Cool.
It's the guy is kind of an asshole, because you play like the sort of like learn how to play games, and it's trivial to beat, and then you play for some real stakes, and it's super hard.
Well, he is a shark.
I know.
Literally.
I know.
He's a hockey shark. The shell game was pretty trivial. I don't know if that's the same for higher stakes.
But even if it was, you're doing like 200 at a time.
I've never missed it at higher stakes. So after you win like 3 or 4 times in a row, he
cuts you off too. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah,
so
that's
not just a
currency factory.
Yeah.
There are places where if you really are desperate for currency, you can go and farm though. So.
Yeah. Like where?
There are caves where enemies just continually spawn.
Mm, okay. And you get the little crystals.
Yeah.
To get the
and they're not hard enough that you're losing life at an appreciable rate. There, some of the mechanics are kind of interesting. The like, you make your friend jump so that you can then hit the enemies into crystals in the wall and stuff.
Mm. There's been some stuff, like there's a room in the mine, I think, where if you don't pay attention to the environment and deliberately smash enemies into crystals or bridges, you just won't be able to go anywhere, and you have to go back and reinitialize that fight to do it.
There's always those little sprout things that you can get to pop out.
Not always.
Things. Really?
Yeah. Huh. There's one... There's like a little side cave with,
yeah,
I think it just has
the lair of the Vargo.
Yeah.
Oh, and all something. That has is that Nautilus, that big Nautilus thing in it, where all there is in there is to take a picture.
That might have been different. Yeah, I'm not sure. But there's definitely somewhere in one of those caves where it's got one of those
not just the mine,
one of those drawbridges that you have to knock down. But
with an enemy. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's no.
That's one of the places where
no
the enemies continue
to spawn.
There.
You have to spawn regular enemies and knock them into it.
Yeah.
I'm excited about this. I want to keep playing it. I don't know that I'm going to finish it.
I had a problem where I wasn't saving regularly because I was, if you died, you just start back like two seconds beforehand. So it was like not a big deal. And I sort of assumed, I guess, that that was an autosave point, but it definitely isn't. Mm-hmm. And then I was probably 90% of the way through the factory and fell through the world and landed in just this like oubliette where I couldn't do anything.
Couldn't get out.
Couldn't die. Couldn't get out. And awful. So I had to reload, which was at the beginning of the factory.
Ugh.
And the factory is at least 2 hours of play, probably, I'd say.
That sucks.
Yeah. So I've gotten back like halfway to where I was, but
why do we think this one was a bad seller?
So, okay, like it seems like both of these games are in a very small genre-defying category. Maybe they just don't know how to sell it.
Yeah,
because
right?
Like
it's very eccentric.
I was trying to come up with a sentence to describe it, and it was like 3D pseudo platformer. Like it's not really a platformer.
Yeah, sort of
it's
adventure
game.
Game, yeah.
And it's action. Like I don't feel like
action adventure.
I do not feel like the gameplay in Beyond Good and Evil is sufficiently different than the gameplay in Ocarina of Time that either one of them is any more uncategorizable than the other.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess Darksiders didn't do all that well either, right? Like, maybe you need a name for a game that's a Zelda clone that you can sell on the merits of Zelda without having to be a Zelda game.
Yeah. I mean, Darksiders did well enough that they're making another one.
I did it?
Yeah. Death is the star in this one.
Hmm. I did not like Darksiders well enough to keep playing it.
Really?
It did not maintain my interest. I was having some fun.
I enjoyed it. I finished it.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
This seems to be divided into dungeons pretty readily, like Beyond Good and Evil.
Yeah, there's
does.
A lot of there's a lot of boat racing.
Yeah.
Hovercraft racing.
Huh.
Yeah. There's a lot of hovercraft racing.
It's always weird to me when
it's all optional though.
When
yeah,
they choose an overworld that is that you're not just running around on. It's always strange to me. That you can't just run around.
Oh, that you're always in a vehicle.
Yeah.
Sure, but you're effectively, I mean, you can pick things up, you can shoot stuff, you like it's just you just become the vehicle,
right? Except on land there's stuff to interact with, so if you have to walk across it there's shit that you can do. In a game where it's just like you're flying a spaceship from planet to planet or you're sailing a boat from island to island,
yeah,
there's nothing interesting in the water. There can't be anything
there's
interesting in the water.
Crates
water.
In the water, there's enemies sometimes, there's
fish.
There's fish to take pictures of.
Feels
also, something you have to realize is it's a hovercraft, so you don't have to be on the water the whole time.
Oh, yeah?
You can go on the land.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you eventually get some ability to jump, which I think lets you get over...
Do you ever get to go past those laser barriers to other places? Or is that just the boundaries of the world?
I believe that is what the jump is for.
Oh. Yeah. There were a bunch of crates on the other side of them, so I was like, oh, clearly I'm going over there eventually.
I never saw any crates.
You should spend more time exploring in the water.
They were trying to keep the...
I recommend just follow, like, you know, pick a... Either go right or go left and then just sort of follow the edge of everything and you'll see a bunch
of
stuff.
I only go straight.
Okay.
I don't actually know how to turn the hovercraft, which kind of explains why. Having to go into that compass mode to get waypoints seems really weird to me. Like, why is there not still a goddamn mini-map? where those compass points are just on the mini map. Like, what
I don't know
is it about, like, what is it about anyone that makes them decide not to put a mini map on a game like this?
I just don't understand how it goes through testing and then they're, you know, why everyone should have complained about that and they should have changed it. That's kind of the same thing I feel like in Ocarina of Time when you're going through the water temple and you got to switch boots every 5 seconds and you got to go into the pause menu to do that. Instead of they could have made a quick key that's very easy.
Yeah.
It just takes, you switch boots about 100 times in that temple.
Yeah. And it's easy to fuck stuff up. It's easy to, like, make a mistake that causes you to have to redo a part of it.
Yeah, or just get out of the flow.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I guess it seems... Maybe the reason that the complaints about that are seem so obvious is because thousands of people have made those complaints. But maybe thousands of people out of the millions of people who played it and among the testers, there was nobody for whom it seemed like a big deal. And so there was just no voice for that complaint.
I have not found the environments complicated enough, honestly, to where I needed a map. The high levels of the factory are confusing as hell, but the map it does not help. So I don't know if that, but everything else has just been like, there are two or three places I can go. Okay, I've gone to those two or three places. I sort of know where everything is.
I mean, I in the mine had to really, really search for exits when I was in rooms.
Huh.
Like, I feel like they're not very clearly delineated.
The first time I went through the mine, I did not see the branch off to the right. That goes down.
Where that vent is?
No, when you're crossing that, like, enemy-filled bridge area.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that, like, you come back and you're on that bridge. And I was like, oh, I didn't even realize that there was
that,
a second
that little
way.
Downward thing where the big jelly is.
And that was kind of neat. Because I was like, oh, that's clever. That was probably there the whole time. And I just never saw it because that you weren't meant to see it because there's all these enemies on the top here. So you fight to the end of that. You go through this door and you come back and you're like, oh, I'm at the far end of this bridge again. So I thought that was actually a really good level design.
I had a really hard time finding my way out of that room. I kept going into a room, exiting, and then going to that bridge and then getting confused about which direction I was going and winding up back in the same room that I was in to begin with. Like, I just, you know, and it was weird. It was another one of those cases where I had put the game down and I came back to it the next day or a couple days later to play some more. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Everything about this game is frustrating because it's like, I guess the game does a pretty good job of teaching you how to navigate it. And then you do a pretty good job of forgetting everything that you learned about how to navigate the game.
Yeah.
So we're going to keep doing this one for another week because I want to give it more of a chance.
And it's worth it.
Yeah. You think?
I think so. I'm enjoying it. I think it's a good
one. Let's see. Let us know, listeners. How would you guys feel about a handful of listener mails?
Handful of wet, glistening reader mails.
Bob writes, concerning Magic the Gathering, there's an actual good reason Magic Online digital products that cost as much as paper products. In order to keep people playing in their local brick-and-mortar store, the price had to be kept equal because, as you mentioned on the podcast, there's a lot of incentive to just play online all day. When Magic Online was released, it was feared the service would drive real stores out of business, and the pricing was an attempt to stop this from happening. That being said, Magic Online still amounts to about half of Wizard's sale of Magic product.
I don't know.
So a cheaper version would drive the cards out of business?
I think a better version that was also cheaper would drive the stores out of business. The argument is that Magic Online is better than playing Magic at a store. So if it wasn't discouraged by making it way too expensive for what it is, then those stores would go out of business.
That seems like a weak
point. I don't know.
Because if those stores aren't strong enough.
Yeah, they rely solely on Magic card sales.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of stores got opened solely because of Magic, right? A lot of local game stores got off the ground because Magic took off and was this crazy thing.
That seems...
But is that what keeps them open now?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know what keeps them open. I always imagined that it is the fact that their owners are already independently wealthy is the only thing that keeps them open because nobody ever buys anything at those stores. They just loiter and stink up the place with their grode BO.
Yeah.
Michael Mickey Cook, Earl of Northumberland Town, writes, hey, chaps, and whatever Yoko Ono-like guest is getting all up in my oral grill this week.
Nice.
Damn. In my day job, I do research into AI that designs stuff. One of the things I'm looking at is designing video games, in particular Metroid/Castlevania-style platformers. Since you guys are the ones that really got me looking at the genre, I want to ask you all what you think makes a good one, what are the key tropes, and what makes a shitty one. Thanks, guys. Keep up the awesome podcast.
Interesting boss fights.
A good one has some backtracking. Bad one has too much backtracking.
Yeah.
Yeah. The signal, like locations that you recognize as, oh, I like, looks like I should be able to get there, but I can't yet. I'm guessing I'll be able to get there later. Yeah. And then power ups that let you get there.
Mm-hmm.
Shortcuts back to earlier sections that you couldn't get back to are nice.
Variety of theming for the various areas.
Yeah. A mini-map.
If you can manage an annotatable mini-map, that would be awesome.
Yeah. Talking about an AI to design them, though, I think it's more...
He's talking more like what are the features
more
of,
about like what are the actual like sort of design features.
Variety, like varied enemies, varied challenges in that way.
Places to grind for items. Candles that shit falls out of when you whip them.
Yeah. Hidden energy storage containers that...
A cake store mini game where you'd whip a coin out of a candle into a cash register and get some cake.
That's terrible.
It's definitely areas with more than one type of enemy. That's one of the great things about Symphony is there's two or three types of enemies that can come at you.
Yeah, and the Symphony has like hundreds of different kinds of enemies.
It's great.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, definitely a lot of variety in your enemies and enemy types and models and...
The thing that makes it good for me, though, this is what I'm learning after not really liking this alien thing. The moment to moment jumping around and attacking stuff doesn't feel good in that game. It feels sluggish and cumbersome. Yeah. You can't always run, which is like
Super Mario Brothers sort of had us all write a contract that, you know, all platforming has to feel good, right? And if it doesn't.
Yeah, I wonder if maybe that cumbersomeness in the Marines was not a design decision because of wanting to feel that danger.
I'm sure that it was, but it was one that makes me kind of not want to play the game. I mean, it's not, you know, I don't want a survival horror Metroidvania because that's, you know, the mobility and the increases in mobility are what make a Metroidvania satisfying, right? Yeah. And they are like... They are really visceral moment-to-moment mobility changes like a double jump as opposed to like them just literally being keys. Like they are keys, right? But they are keys that make you feel more powerful, not like a guy that has more keys.
Yeah, the new Aliens game is definitely not a good... I think it's a good game, but it's not a good example of a Metroidvania in general.
Yeah, nor I think Monster... Puzzler. What was that thing called? Monster Tale.
Okay,
that was kind of a bad Metroidvania.
That was the worst example of level design we've encountered.
I think that they when they gave you a new key, they thought, okay, what is the furthest point from this in the geometry of the game right now? And that's where they put the door that was locked
super
by that
annoying.
Key. Crazy arbitrary.
And a lot of them were, like the locks were... just ridiculously designed, like obviously like, okay, we've come up with this cool attack, now how can we possibly design an environmental feature that is only openable by this new attack? Which was just, it just felt so contrived
in a way that, you know, the Castlevania games are really good at like just making it into things that don't feel like, you know, like turning into mist for a while, like this is a thing that makes you invulnerable and also lets you like jump higher, right, and get through gratings, which totally makes sense and is awesome.
The throwing the puppet one was a little weird, but
because you'd never really use
that for anything else.
You know, that like I think having them be things that are awesome is way better than just having them be things that unlock doors and put optional stuff in, like when you get a new key, that key should open six doors that you've seen up to this point, five of which have some cool treasure behind them and one of which has game progression behind it, not one door and nothing else like in fucking Monster. And I played Monster Tale to the end, but I did not like it. I was angry at the level design the entire time.
I like having a good variety of equipment. and maybe even not necessarily always, but a crafting thing is nice.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Jacques Minot writes in the forums, assignment request, Super Mario RPG, Legend of the Seven Stars. I'm definitely going to do that at some point. Yeah. That game,
awesome game.
That game rules. Game. Have you played it all the way through?
Not all the way through. I've played some of it on emulator.
Paper Mario.
Paper
too.
Mario also, yeah. Because that's an example of an RPG that really
holds true to your small
it
number.
It really
fetish.
Defined a lot of my design sensibilities. And I think it'd be interesting for you guys to see it at least.
Is that the one where the computer watches Peach in the shower? Or is that the second one?
That is the newer one. That's the Wii one, isn't it?
Is it? Or the I feel like it was older than that.
The GameCube.
I think it might be the GameCube one.
Yeah. Anyway, says, I feel the story is excellent, and we really get to see characters develop in a fashion previously unseen in the series. Also, it has Mallow and Geno. Also, do you pronounce it Mallow or Mallow? I say Mallow as in marshmallow.
How many L's are in it?
It's M-A-L-L-O-W.
Oh, that's which I Mallow. Think is Mallow. Absolutely.
What type of game do you hate the most? Sports game?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I don't even think about sports games when that question kind of comes up. It's my go-to of games that piss me off is like pure platforming games.
I think pure cutscene games piss me off. More
than anything else. you mean a DVD?
A game that is all cutscenes. Yeah. Yeah, this game, I got to make one choice in the beginning and there's no controls from then on.
I'm really unfond of games that like the combat is picking attacks from giant menus of attacks. Like
so,
turn-based combat.
So you don't like JRPGs?
Combat.
That's because
not
there's
really.
Something wrong with you. You're not going to like Paper Mario either, and you're going to be provably wrong for not liking it.
I mean, it's just boring, right? Like, I like arcade-style combat.
You know, I think I thought I was playing Dragon's Lair, but in fact, I was watching Dragonheart.
I mean, Jay, a menu attack system like that can be very boring.
Menu attack.
If it's done well to where you're having to think strategically, then I find that can be a lot, not necessarily more interesting than
maybe.
Active combat.
I like it.
Yeah.
The reason
especially
that it keeps,
if there's a real active time limit, there's a pressure.
Yeah.
And I actually really like that.
Paper Mario has the thing where there are also these sort of timing and trick things that you have to do that can make the attacks more effective.
Yeah.
And you don't have to do them, but you have to do them if you want to get through efficiently without having to burn through a bunch of consumables and stuff in the hard fights. Like,
that was what was great about
in,
that.
In Super Mario RPG, to some extent, although in Super Mario RPG, they're so obscure that you basically have to look them up on a wiki to figure out how to do all but the most simple of them. And they make you so much more powerful than you would be if you didn't know about them. It's pretty weird.
Huh.
It's a weird design choice. It's like a trick that quadruples your damage every time you attack. And it's just like a trick that you have to figure out and then execute every time. Let's see. Is me, you idiot, says, hey guys, I've heard you talking about Magic the Gathering on episode 26, so I'd like to know, what do you guys think of the game's recent history? R&D has been doing a lot to create interesting new mechanics, and the game's design has been really innovative with stuff like mana costs that can be paid with life, and the newest set's double-faced cards. I don't know how I feel about the double-faced cards.
I think it's interesting. I wish they had come up with some way of implementing them other than having pseudo cards that you mix into your deck.
It does
and
not
swap
make
out.
Any sense to me that you have you have to have two cards to have that system work, right? Like the sort of placeholder card and the two-faced card.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you just have two single-faced cards and just have them on the side and you swap them in when you change them?
Right. Replace this.
Yeah.
Like
if
you do this thing, replace this with this card from outside the game.
Yeah.
Like you could just do that. And that card. Maybe that card has
a
cannot
sense.
Be put in your deck, or they balance them with an absurd mana cost, right? Like the one that I saw, the only thing that I've seen that works like that is like this 1/1, like secret hunter or something, 1 blue mana for a 1/1 that if you like, you can tap him to look at the top card in your deck, and if it is a sorcery, you flip him over and he turns into a 3/2 flying.
There's a bunch of werewolves.
Which you could make the 3/2 flying cost 30 blue mana so that no one would ever cast it. And
actually you probably couldn't, because there's a lot of cards that do things based on the mana cost of a target card.
Oh, okay. Well, then you couldn't. So then you would have to balance those in some way. Yeah, I don't know. I was not aware that that's how those double-sided cards work. I mean, I like it when they try interesting stuff, right? Like, one of the best things that I got out of the talk that Richard Garfield gave was they were asking him, like, does it upset you that these broken cards come out in every set and they have to keep restricting stuff and, like, going back on these things that they fucked up? And he said that it does not upset him. In fact, it makes him happy when there is a set with broken cards in it, because it means that they are trying new stuff. Mm-hmm. If they never make any mistakes, it means that they are playing it safe and probably making a less interesting set than they would be if they weren't afraid to take some risks every once in a while and sometimes have those risks
these
result
games
in something.
Are fun when you find a combination that's like overpowering or like, you know, in PvP, like in World of Warcraft, I don't think they ever wanted all the classes to be perfectly balanced. They wanted them to be fun. And then, you know, people found combinations that worked really well together or whatever. But like, you're not having things be perfectly balanced makes them boring.
Yeah.
So you need to have a little bit of imbalance to make the game more compelling, in my opinion.
Florin writes, "Dear Riff, Kevin, and Zach."
And Aaron.
"Which do you appreciate most in a video game? Graphics, ease of gameplay, as in no annoying camera controls, no one-pixel platform targets, etc. Story, humor, challenge, as in difficulty, or genre? Puzzle, tower defense, RTS, etc. It's got to be a total package, baby.
Yeah. Gotta.
It's one thing.
It's weird.
A lot of ingredients go into a delicious...
I am super forgiving of bad graphics. I really don't care. You know, like...
Yeah. I am to a point. I can't... I've tried to play Final Fantasy VII... but can't because the graphics are so dated.
I think that's a good example, too.
That was a bad period of time.
Yeah. And that was when they were trying. It was like that was the limit at the time. There's a difference between bad graphics and simple graphics.
Yeah, definitely.
Simple graphics can be amazing. But
the backdrops were great.
Yeah, but FF7, right, anything in the engine was awful.
The 3D bullshit, that was when I was very much decrying... I was like, guys, stop making 3D games. This isn't good enough. Make it better, and then you can make 3D games, you know, which they had to do it to make it better and whatever. Yeah. But, like, I can't play the original Ocarina of Time because it looks like shit. I've played, you know, I've got a little ways into the remake.
It's just not that important, you know?
It is.
I can play the original Ocarina. It's not so bad to me.
Yeah, I don't think it would bother me even
but
a little bit.
I do agree on Final Fantasy VII. It's the blocky characters are... That's one game I'd love to see a remake of with modern graphics.
I mean, you know, Deus Ex looked like ass, and it was fun.
Yeah, Deus Ex was fun.
Yeah,
when we played XCOM, the sort of like bewilderingness of the interface was very much of a turnoff. When I was a kid, that would not have been as big a deal. But like that is definitely much more troublesome to me than the graphic style.
It is hard. I mean, certain things like letting you know what a button does when you mouse over it that they just, you know, hadn't necessarily discovered then that you've come to expect now.
Well,
they make things really
glaring
back then. On retrospect.
I like puzzle games more than most other kinds of games, so I definitely will gravitate towards that. But, I can play a first-person shooter and enjoy it. So...
I think that's enough. I think that's enough listener mail for one show. We've run pretty long. Thanks for joining us again, Aaron. Aaron. I think we're gonna close this show with a pretty sweet Halloween-y minibuses track. We didn't talk about Halloween even a little bit.
Yeah.
Spooky skeletons with clowns painted on them was about as far as we got.
If you see someone in a spooky skeleton costume, make sure to beat them until they give you a sweet sword.
The true horror of love addiction. Good night, everybody. Oh, wait. We got to tell everybody how to get a hold of us. I'm so bad at fucking podcasts. Let me mark that to edit out.
Fuck them then.
So, Kevin, if somebody wanted to send us a listener mail, how would they where send it?
Well, they could send it to Twitter @VGHotDog. They could email us, VGHotDog@gmail.com. Or they could write something in the forums. They could go to VideoGamesHotDog.com.
Video Games Hot Dog, by the way, part of the Hot Dog family of amazing podcasts, available online at hot.dotvideonet.netvideonetnet.hotdog.hotdognet.com.
Have a great week, everybody.
See ya.
Bye-bye.